JC2S, Part 2.
Number 12B.
All right, so we're going to read in the textbook here from page 109, line 32 to 110.12. The three great verities of spirit. We hear that big spirit tone here. What are they? They're omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscience, meaning spirit possessing all power, filling all space, constituting all science, contradict forever the belief that matter can be actual. These eternal verities reveal primeval existence as a radiant reality of God's creation, in which all that he has made is pronounced by his wisdom good. Thus it was that I beheld as never before the awful unreality called evil, the equipotence of God, brought to light another glorious proposition, man's perfectibility and the establishment of the kingdom of heaven on earth. So showing that I am reasoning out, she says, from that standpoint of the equipotence of God, which means the allness of God's spirit, hence the awful unreality called God. Equipotence of God means of equal value. Equipotence, that's what it means. Equipotence means, just as I said, of equal value. So therefore, she's saying, when I say the allness of God's spirit, as she just showed us in the paragraph before, the three great verities of spirit, omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscient, spirit possessing all power, that it's the only radiant reality of God's creation. So therefore, spirit is the only. And therefore, when she can says that spirit is the only, the all, she's saying exactly the same thing when she says the awful unreality called evil. Because when she's saying that evil is unreal, she's saying spirit is real. And that is the logic behind the first and second record of creation. The first record of creation, as we see in Christian Science versus Spiritualism, is saying all is spirit. That's that big tone behind the fourth chapter. All is spirit. Hence, all is only the first record of creation. Hence, the second record of creation is unreal. And by saying that the second record of creation is hence the awful unreality called evil, that's what that second record of creation is, the unreality called evil. So really, as we've seen then, that second record of creation proves the first through this reasoning of the equipotence of God. If spirit is all, there is no place for anything else to be, since hence the awful unreality of spiritualism. Hence the second record, that principle God can be turned into its opposite. It can't. And so that awful unreality called evil, called the second record of creation, goes according to the laws of matter, the laws of entropy, and goes towards a heat death. It is excommunicated from the presence of the Lord. So therefore, that's the equipotence reasoning of the first and second record. You can say one and the same thing. When we say that spirit is all of equal value, we can say, and evil is nothing. Evil is unreal. It's saying the same thing, isn't it? So that's the logic of the Bible, of setting up the first and second record of creation, as it's the logic as I just said, the first and second record. It's the logic of the thousand-year periods, being showing that it is all, the I am, throughout all creation. Hence the lifting off of the awful unreality called evil, going the other way. So we have evolution versus entropy. So therefore, that is the logic. That's the language of spirit. That's a language of spiritual reasoning. That's a language of the one-valued logic. It's easy. Mrs. Eddy said that Christian Science is easy when the way is pointed out. Everything is just, in Mrs. Eddy's writings, using this equipollence of God reasoning, as did the biblical writers. Either God is all, hence the awful unreality called evil. The unreality is taken away and the spiritual evolves. It's easy, it's simple. So, therefore, that we hear that over and over again. And that's why what I like to do is always then, where I can and where it's very clear in a text, to set on one side the value that spirit is all. So on the left-hand side, I put all down, as we've seen then, what is of all spirit. And on the other side, hence the awful unreality called evil. So on life in and of spirit, when we reason with the equipollence of God, we see she's first saying what is real. That martyrs were called in the Greek time witnesses. Therefore, they're those who testify for the truth. They're the followers of Christ. They're the followers of the true theology, which have the spiritual sense of life in and of spirit. And their theology is evolving. It has waxed strong in times of trouble. It has the Christ power to illustrate the doctrines of the Christ in the miracles of grace. It has the healing divine force, which has astonishing, surprising life, an equal success, spiritual success. Those witnesses of the truth are not persecuted. That's a lie. That's a belief of the world, that the pioneers of truth has to be persecuted. But Mrs. Eddy says, remember, this is the sixth chapter. And already in the fifth chapter at the Law of Life, she said, I've shown that the Law of Life shows that a pioneer of truth is blessed. Because she picks up that whole life tone and says, oh no, she says, life, the Father, is always providing us out of its divine origin with the abundance of the ideas of mind and the abundance of the ideas of spirit and the abundance of the ideas of soul and the abundance of the ideas of life and truth and love. That's what God the Father is providing for us. That's the only thing. Therefore, the pioneer of truth is just flooded with the abundance of God, with the out of the isness, out of spontaneously coming out of isness, a pioneer of truth is blessed with the allness of God. And with the allness of God, she says, against such a consciousness, there is no law. There is no persecution. That's a lie. That's spiritualism. It wants to say that a witness for truth, the true sense of martyr, is persecuted. It's spiritualism coming in, trying to rob the forward development of its idea, always trying to take the child away and giving it to somebody else, taking the child away and giving it to somebody else, or taking the child away and killing it. That's why in the Bible we always have hiding the child, hiding it somewhere, under a table, under somewhere. Get the child so it isn't persecuted. That's that false sense that it can be killed. But she said if we stay with these laws, animal magnetism is unmasked. We see that we have given no power to this opposite, awful unreality called evil. In the laws that handle animal magnetism, they unmask animal magnetism and see then that the only power going on is the Christ power. Here at this point, that life power, that life which is bringing the followers of Christ, the martyrs, the true witnesses of God, a spiritual sense of life, and that life is always evolving. It always waxes strong in time of troubles. And therefore, that whole belief that a martyr is persecuted unto death, one who suffers for his convictions, only will die out because it does not have the Christ power to evolve. It's just those man-made doctrines based on material concepts of life. And she says they're waning. They're in that law of entropy. They're dying out. They have not waxed strong in times of trouble. They're weak. Hear the entropy? They're weak. They're dissipating. They're devoid of life of power. They're robbed of the divine force of evolution. All they are going to do is dissipate, become weaker and weaker and weaker until they just die out. So stick to the allness of spirit and see that that is the only side that we look at the world from, is that we are martyrs, but we are martyrs in the fact that we are witnesses and followers of life in and of spirit, life in and of evolution, and we evolve, and we are strong. As I said, what John Dorley said, I believe it was in this class, when one says has many classes within a short period of time, as you know, it's hard to remember, but I think I said to this class where John Dorley said, and the persecution came, and he says, and I was persecuted, and it came at me full force, but I got fat on it. See, he said, I had that life in and of spirit. I waxed strong in times of troubles. It made me stronger. Let it come, he says. And don't give it power. He says, and if you don't give it power, you'll make your enemies your friends. Okay, so let's take a break. Yes, so we will come back and epitomize the marginal heading on page 134, around line 23, basis of miracles, after we go on in color. Now, 134, starting on line 31. So she says, a miracle fulfills God's law. Well, again, meaning is relational. And it's determined by its context where God's law is. If it was God's law in the life as mind tone, it would have the law of life in and of mind. But here, a miracle fulfills God's law. She just talked about that immutable law of God, good spirit. So referring back to that law of God's spirit. A miracle fulfills God's law, but does not violate that law. This fact at present seems more mysterious than the miracle itself. All right, we changed pages. The psalmist sang, what ailed thee, O thou sea, that thou fleddest, thou Jordan, that thou wast driven back, ye mountains that ye skip like rams, and little hills like lambs. Tremble, thou earth, at the presence, the life, the presence of the Lord, of life in and of spirit, at the presence of the God of Jacob. The miracle introduces no disorder. That would be the fact of life, that miracle introduces no disorder. But what does it do? It unfolds the primal order, spirit, establishing the science of God's unchangeable law. Well, she's hearkening us to the fact that life of soul is coming next. And then she gave, as we saw, this beautiful epitome of this tone. Spiritual evolution alone is worthy of the exercise of divine power. Meaning spiritual evolution alone, spirit, the exercise of divine power, life, huh? So we see then that if we do an abstraction from this, doing the basis of miracles, that marginal heading, 134 on, and I've often done these abstractions, marginal heading to marginal heading, if it allows for the flow of the subject to break at an important point within a subtone. That would be the only reason I would be using it, just for logical breaks as we do it together in class. So here, taking together marginal heading basis of miracles and what we just had, the marginal heading lawful wonders, we see that it can all be based down to the basis of the miracle, or the lawful wonder comes from the gift of the life power. We've already learned that in life, in Christianity, in the Bible, by Paul, that we live by grace. We live by the gift of God, that life power brings to us the miracles, those useful wonders. But we'll see that those are not supernatural, as she says, that those miracles, really come to us by the Christ Spirit, by the Christ, the true Word of God. That life power is bringing us those miracles. And those miracles are not mysterious as they are to the human mind, but to the mind of Christ, those are very natural events. They are the natural law of harmony. They are the natural law of spirit, which is that life power, which is the natural law of spirit, has the Christ impulsion behind it to overcome all discord, meaning all material resistance, the opposite of spirit. And as she says, it's called a miracle, but it's not. She says, it's not supernatural. It's not preternatural. It's not an infraction of the law. She says, therefore, it's not something that is unnatural to the law of life in and of spirit. That's why she says, yes, it's not unnatural. It is the immutable law of God, good spirit. It is the spirit superiority of spiritual power over material resistance. She says, that's what a miracle is. It's natural. It's just the law of life in and of spirit operating. And to us as Christian Scientists, that's natural. So therefore, she shows then that Jesus, being a natural divine scientist, at work with a consciousness filled with the allness of the law of life in and of spirit, and against such a consciousness, there is no law of life in and of matter, life in and of material resistance. Hence, he raised Lazarus from the dead, from the belief of life in and of matter. Stilling the tempest, healing the sick, walking over the water, all that which says that life is in and of matter and material laws. And he said, no, I am only basing myself on life in and of spiritual laws, those laws of God, those laws which are unfolding primal order, those laws which are evolving, those laws which are establishing the science of God as that unchangeable law. So we see then that this whole sense really... And then I just went on to the next point. Luis will put the slide up for us, of life in and of spirit. So we see then that this is, as we said, just in a recapitulation form now, always knowing then, as Max has epitomized, that the Christ Spirit overcomes all material resistance, then we know whenever we that it overcomes material resistance, as we say, there's evolution. Because as we saw earlier, when we lift off the restraints of matter, we only evolve. So here we have that theory of evolution, however we would want to show it. Which is always pointing out then that only spirit evolves. So we have there, we could take up the subjects of life in and of spirit as Max has given it in his booklet, evolution, material or spiritual, shows that only life is in and of spirit, only the spirit evolves. One could talk about that little booklet here. Or his booklet on the spiritual breakthrough to the next millennium is all about spiritual evolution, how only spirit evolves and not matter evolves. So these, or the little booklet he also has on Christ idea, how life is in and of spirit and spiritual evolution rather than, and not a material evolution. Then we can see that this subject also, as we go on, and you can just see I'm just putting down in my notes more and more points that one can bring out from such a big subject that she has just given us an insight into. We said it was a textbook, didn't we? So a textbook just gives the skeleton of something. So you can go on, if we stay within the tone of life in and of spirit, then go on in your notes, say, gee, look at this. This is telling me about life in and of spiritual evolution. And as I say, where else do I see that? And then I just mentioned some of the booklets from Max. But there you can fill in the notes and fill in the subject. But keeping to the tonality. Or we can see that this sense of life in and of spirit is also life then in of the new life birth. Spirit, isn't it? That is life in and of the new birth. Meaning it's not anymore that sense that it's life in and of the birth, in and of the material concept, but it's life in and of spirit, life in and of the spiritual birth, which has been brought to us through life in and of spiritual evolution, that it's really breaking the concept that we were born into matter, that we have life in and of matter. It's overcoming within our consciousness that belief of a material birth. But saying, no, that it, all that has been really going on is always the new birth within our consciousness. Always, every time we're coming out from divine science, from the one life which is God, we have the new birth going on. That's why I always say that with every class, that we are experiencing the surprise of life. That's that new birth. Every moment, that's this, at this point when I say that we're always experiencing life in and of spirit, life in and of evolution. It's never the same. Every day is different. So I end the day by saying, and tomorrow we'll experience the surprise of life and the adventure of love. We're going to experience newness, evolution, taking us forward, the new birth, every day. Spontaneously, instantaneously, coming out of divine origin, always evolving, always waxing us strong, taking and lifting off the material concepts. All right, so therefore I think that's the main point there. We can see, yes, I think that's it. Let's look now then at the next point of, no, there's one point there, if Louisa has it says a life in and of spirit about Jesus. Do you see something that has Jesus there? One of those, I've skipped a few. All right, that one. So therefore, this is what Mrs. Eddy brought out, and I just wanted to show this a little bit in more in my notes under life in and of spirit. Where when life is in of spirit, we individually and consciously partake of spiritual evolution. And that was, again, as we've talked about Jesus, how he was that big mutation in evolution. That's life as spirit. He was something new to the world. That's why the world changes its a whole time dating system. It was before Christ and after Christ. My goodness, what an impact. That now he changed the whole sense of recording history. So we can say, yes, of course, he was the biggest mutation of life that has ever taken place in evolution. He was the greatest representative of this law of life in and of spirit. Why? Because the individually life broke the chain of material evolution. From that first living cell up to the highest sense of immortal. So we see that he was a new creature, a new mutation. He was the Son of God. He came forth from the Father, you see. Now we're seeing that's what the textbook through science and consciousness is letting us discover, that we too can break the resistance of that chain of material evolution. We are not of that chain from the first living cell up to the brain, which is just matter evolving, that we get a brain that becomes more and more intelligent. From the first man with the small brain, then to the man evolving into a larger brain, well, that brain is just matter evolving. It's just matter giving rise to the brain. We're not part of that evolution. Jesus said, I'm in it, but not of it. He broke that. He was not the son of David. He was not the son of man. He was not the outcome of a long material evolution. But he came forth from the Father. He was a son of God. His origin was from life in and of spirit. Life in and of spirit brought him forth. Life in and of spirit gave him birth. The life which is spirit brought forth the new mutation, the new creature called Jesus then that broke evolution. And it will do it for us. He did it for Mrs. Eddy too. That's why she was healed. That's why she shows us right there at the beginning of the textbook how she says on page 108, when apparently near the confines of mortal existence, see, if we turn to page 108, line 19, it's important to see that it's this point where she also came, was a new mutation. She was also then broke the line of evolution, of the Darwinian evolution. She became a new creature. You see there, 108, line 19. When apparently near the confines of mortal existence, the belief of life in and of matter, standing already within the shadow of death's valley. See that whole material evolution up to a mortal, which just brings death. Because matter is subject to those laws of entropy. She says, when apparently near the confines of that mortal existence, which has brought me near death's valley because it believes of life in and of matter, and only life in and of matter goes towards death, I learned something new. I learned these truths in divine science, that all real being is in God, the divine mind, and that life, truth, and love are all-powerful and ever-present. That the opposite of truth called error, sin, sickness, disease, death, is only the false testimony of the false material sense of what? Mind in the matter concept. That this false sense evolves in belief a subjective state of mortal mind, which the same so-called mind names matter. And what does that belief that mortal mind has called matter and life in and of matter? She says, what did it do? It shut out the true sense of life in and of spirit.